For our feature interview today, we have Lynn Kavanaugh on the show. She is the farming campaign manager of the nonprofit organization World Animal Protection Canada. World Animal Protection's mission is to end the needless suffering of animals by influencing decision makers to put animals on the global agenda and by inspiring people to change animals' lives for the better. Just recently, World Animal Protection has released a 40-page report entitled Silent Superbug Killers in a River Near You. This report speaks on how factory farms contaminate water courses on three continents and has discovered that public waterways next to industrial farms in Manitoba and around the world contain antibiotic-resistant genes that are dangerous to public health. In today's interview, Lynn will share some of the details of this report and explain the ongoing dangers of antibiotic resistance in our country and beyond. Hello, Lynn, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for coming on the show today to discuss with us a topic that is of ongoing concern in Canada and worldwide. That is the subject of standardized antibiotic use in factory farms on animals and the dangers that this practice presents to public health. Can you start by explaining to our listeners, for those who don't know, how antibiotics work and what happens when we overuse them?
Sure. So antibiotics are medications designed to treat bacterial infections. And when we overuse them, it gives bacteria a chance to develop resistance to them, and then they're no longer effective in treating infections. And when approximately 75% of antibiotics globally are given to farm animals, it's a major contributor to antibiotic resistance.
Yeah, it's something that we really don't talk about. And speaking of antibiotic resistance, can you explain as well a term that we'll be using? What are ARGs?
So those are antibiotic resistant genes. And when we undertook our study, that's what we tested for. And they're essentially the building blocks of antibiotic resistant bacteria. Bacteria can acquire resistant genes either by spontaneous mutation or by genetic exchange with other bacteria. So it means they can pass on a resistant gene. One bacteria can pass on a resistant gene to another. But that's what we tested for in our water testing study.
Right.
Or the ARG.
And this comes to the subject of superbugs. So can you speak about this research that was done in 2020? You did it in four countries over three continents that resulted in World Animal Protection's report on silent superbug killers. What locations were examined and what evidence was collected and analyzed?
Yeah, so what we did is we undertook collecting water and soil samples from public waterways that are near industrial pig operations in four countries, Spain, Thailand, the US, and Canada. And in Canada, we did the testing in Manitoba, where we collected 42 water and soil samples near eight intensive pig operations. And the reason we chose Manitoba is, although it's the third largest province for pig farming in Canada, it has the highest density of farms, so a lot of animals in close proximity to one another. The largest number of pigs on one farm in Manitoba is over 5,700. So that's why we chose Manitoba for conducting this testing. And what we found in the 42 samples that we collected is 38 of those were positive for at least one of the tetracycline-resistant genes included in the analysis. We found also that more than three quarters of the samples were positive for three or more tetracycline-resistant genes. And overall, we found positive results for resistance to antibiotics categorized as highly important or critically important for human health by the World Health Organization.
And I'd like you to speak, if you could, please, about the conditions that lead up to actually these superbugs being created off these industrial farms. We're talking Manitoba here. This is happening in Canada. I've been into an industrial hog farm myself, and I can say it was the worst of the worst I've ever seen. This is standard industrialized practice in Canada. So could you describe for us what these farms look like and the conditions that the pigs are in to make these antibiotics needed to give them, and they're being given to them preventatively?
Yes, that's right. And that's a really good point, Allison. So The issue is that the animals are given what's called prophylactic antibiotics, or as you said, preventive. And that's different than giving antibiotics to a sick animal. Of course, we want animals who are sick to get treated, just like we would treat ourselves if we have an infection. But giving them on a preventive basis en masse in large quantities is the issue. That's what leads to the development of antibiotic resistance because there's just so many antibiotics being dished out regularly. And the reason the animals are given prophylactic antibiotics is because the conditions in which they're raised are what we would consider poor welfare. So that makes them more vulnerable to illness. You know, things like being kept in crowded, barren conditions, mixing unknown animals with one another, these things cause the animals stress. And when a biological system or organism is stressed, they're going to be more vulnerable to opportunistic infections. Other things such as early weaning, taking the piglets from the sow too early, they're still growing. They're, how human babies are more vulnerable to infections. Same with piglets that are weaned too early. They're also subjected to what we call painful procedures like tail docking and castration. Again, procedures that make them more vulnerable to infections. So the answer in the intensive agriculture industry is to give these antibiotics to prevent any illness or infection rather than changing the conditions in which the animals are raised for the better to suit their social, biological, and physical needs.
Right. So there'll be people listening to this who might be from Manitoba. They might be from the Fraser Valley here in the Lower Mainland, big farming land there. And they might say, well, my uncle treats his pigs fine. They're not confined. They get to have their space and walk around. What would be your response to this?
Well, there are different levels of systems, I guess you could say, and there's no doubt that some farming systems might be a little bit better, but by and large, a conventional system does not meet the welfare of the animals. It's not to vilify or point the finger at one individual farmer, but it's more a systemic problem. And it has emerged over time, over many decades of changing the system that is really rooted in a priority for production and economics, getting animals fattened and to slaughter as quickly as possible. And the animals have suffered as a result. And so it's not like one farmer does not care about their animals, but again, it's the system issue. In order to be competitive, they need to raise their animals in a certain way. Now, if there's a producer or a farmer might choose not to go that conventional route and might choose to have what we'd call a higher welfare system, perhaps organic or just something where maybe it's not labeled organic, but higher welfare, where they let the animals go outside or the pigs are raised on straw, which is a really important enrichment material for pigs to meet their behavioral desires to root around. And they might have small numbers of animals that have more space. But in conventional barns, even if they're not in a confinement housing system like a gestation stall, the pens can still be quite crowded and new animals are getting mixed with each other regularly, which is definitely a stress for the animals.
I have to say that, upon my experience, they're really dirty as well. There's just urine and fecal matter everywhere because that's where they have to go to the bathroom, is where they live. So I imagine that that doesn't help the situation as well, just the really dirty conditions.
Yes, that's it too. And that's something that's really hard to paint a picture of. As you just said, Allison, it's dirty, but it's hard to paint a picture unless you're in a barn. So what happens in a typical system is that the urine and the feces fall in the slats on the floor below. And so there's what's called a manure pit, and that's where all the slurry is collected. And the fumes from the waste comes up into the barn. And so it's quite pungent with ammonia, and the pigs are breathing that in every day. So that's another source of poor welfare in terms of the air quality. And then, the slurry or the feces is where the residue antibiotics collect, because when the antibiotics are fed to the animals, mostly in feed, but there could be some injectables too, they're not fully metabolized. I mean, things through, just the biological process get eliminated, and the residue antibiotics are in that manure. And when you have big hog operations, there's huge amounts of liquid manure or slurry, as it's sometimes called, which needs to be disposed of. And that gets disposed of by using it as fertilizer on crops largely. But that then can seep into the groundwater, can make its way into public waterways, into well water, into recreational water. And that's how bacteria in the environment become resistant, and that's how they can make their way to humans as well, being in these public waterways or on crops.
Yes, and I know that people who live in these areas, for example, when I was at that industrialized hog farm, just not far from where we live here, just the air in the area just reeked of ammonia. And it was just like a smell you couldn't get rid of. And I was reading in your report, as you said, a large amount of the antibiotics aren't metabolized. That's up to 70%. Of antibiotics that are administered to farm animals that aren't absorbed. And I was just really shocked to hear that because, as you were saying, where they end up going is into our environmental waterways, which is what you were testing, right?
Yes, that's right. We tested the waterways that in public spaces, we didn't go onto property, in public spaces that are near the farms, and also soil samples. We didn't actually test the air, but in the report we referenced another study so that found antibiotic resistant gene material in the air near these farms. And other studies too in Canada have found similar results where antibiotic resistant genes were, you know, in the feces of wildlife that were living on or near the farm, in recreational beaches that are near industrial pig operations. So there's other evidence to show it's not just the study and the sampling that we did. The really main thing to emphasize here is that it's such a serious public health issue. If people are new to animal welfare or they're not as familiar with factory farming, we know that, and this is an Animal Voices show, so I think that probably a lot of your audience is aware about how horrible these systems are for animals. But the link to public health is very strong too. And this is partly why we're working on this issue, is to show that connection between how we treat animals has significant implications for humans too, and the interconnection between animals and humans. And, you know, the World Health Organization cites antibiotic resistance as one of the top 10 global public health crises. 700,000 people die right now every year from not being able to be treated by an antibiotic because they have resistance. And these can be commonplace infections, you know, and they estimate by 2050, it could be upwards of 10 million if we don't get a handle on this issue. And industrial animal agriculture is a major contributor to that problem.
Yes, it's really a crisis. And the World Health Organization has even warned that the superbug crisis is just as dangerous as the pandemic we're currently experiencing, with that many deaths, which really goes unreported in the media and to the public, I believe. Now, the European Union, it seems that they're always ahead of us in many ways, especially with regards to factory farming. They are actually banning the administering of antibiotics across groups of farmed animals to prevent disease by January 2022. Should Canada be the next country to instate such a ban? And where does Canada currently stand on this issue, I'm wondering?
Yes, absolutely. We should be the next country. Whether we will be or not is another story. But yes, that's one thing we are lobbying for in our when we're speaking to government representatives, as we are talking about this issue and asking the government that, and we're just in the early days of starting what we're calling our new food system strategy, where we do focus still, of course, on animal welfare, farm animal welfare, but also linking those problems to other issues like antibiotic overuse in farming. So we would like to see the Canadian government phase out the prophylactic use of antibiotics as they've done in Europe. It's really necessary. And you're right, Europe will often take the lead on these kinds of things, but it's a very important precedent because their farming systems are similar to, they are globally intensive. I mean, they have some, in some cases, there are better conditions. They might have stronger animal welfare laws, but overall, it's still an economy that has a lot of animals in industrial agriculture. And so if they can do it, we can do it.
I think it's surprising and alarming that this has come so far to even be an issue, because it's already killing hundreds of thousands of people every year. As the report says, there is no international standard describing the concentration at which superbugs in the environment become dangerous to people. So consequently, no one is held responsible, and farm discharge of antibiotics and superbugs into waterways are unmonitored. Now, how can we make our governments accountable on this issue to the health of their citizens, you know, specifically in Canada, but obviously worldwide as well, where you're discovering this problem happening?
Yeah, so I mean, I mean, I think it might sound trite, but I think it's really important for people to speak to their legislator, their member of parliament, because we know in the work that we're doing now, as we start to talk to legislators about our campaign issues, is that they say it's important to hear from their constituents and they prioritize those conversations. If more and more people say they're concerned about antibiotic use and give them some stats, the kinds of things that I shared. You know, the number of people that are dying, the 75% of antibiotics used worldwide go into farming. When we meet with MPs, sometimes they don't even know that and they're completely stunned. So that's one thing that they can do. I think also the private sector is an important forum for making change. So retailers, for example, sometimes you'll see that some meat products have antibiotic free, and that's because there is a growing concern around for people that eat meat around consuming those antibiotics. And so the retailers are an important constituent or stakeholder in making change. We don't want to necessarily see antibiotic free because we want to make sure, as I said, animals get treated if they're sick. We'd also love to see the medical community be more outspoken. You know, you hear about the medical community being really mindful about not over-prescribing antibiotics to people if they come in for, like, you know, a cold or a few sniffles. But
Sometimes. Yeah.
sometimes, yes, it's true. I would say it's certainly much better than it was 20, 30 years ago. But, you know, that's not the bulk of the antibiotics being dished out and served up. It's through farm animals. And so if they spoke out about the impact on human health, that could have some sway too, because people, of course, respect the scientific voice.
It's astounding, actually, as you mentioned before. I believe it's 80% of all antibiotics that are administered in Canada, and I've heard, you know, this is in other countries too. They're given to animals and not humans, so no wonder why we have a resistance to them. Most of those antibiotics that aren't absorbed by animals, they're actually coming back to humans, right? And that's just that's a national and international travesty. And you know, with COVID having happened in the past year and the way that that has all impacted society, you'd think that we'd be really ready to make some drastic changes. And in the report, I noticed that one of the recommendations also is to push industry to create more plant proteins in their sectors, which would ultimately drive out the need for humans to eat meat. Can you speak a little bit more on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ultimately, in the end, that's going to have the biggest impact is we need to change what we're eating. And we need to consume far less animal foods in favor of more plant-based foods. And why is that? Well, because the demand for meat and dairy and other animal foods are driving intensification of animal agriculture. There are so many animals squashed in these close confinement or crowded housing systems across the world. It's because we eat so much meat and it's that demand that's driving it. So to reduce the demand for animal foods will make way for us to make changes to that system. You know, right now the earth does not have the carrying capacity to have all the animals that exist right now on outdoors in big pastures. It's just not possible. But if we're raising far fewer animals, then there would be space to have them raised in a more humane and sustainable way that's in more, you know, harmony with the earth. And, you know, of course, being vegan is a great option, but it's not something that everyone is willing to do. So what we say is that cut down your consumption drastically of animal foods. If you were to cut it by 50% in favor of more plant-based foods, you would have a huge impact on not only the animals, but when it's a higher welfare system, then we don't need to use the antibiotics. And then it's also better for the environment too. I would say there's a growing awareness around industrial agriculture and the impact on environment, but it's of course a major contributor to climate change and greenhouse gas emissions, which itself has its own health implications. And so it's just better all around. And this is another thing that we're talking to the government about is to start being more vocal about that. It will help meet our climate change targets in Canada. It aligns with the Canada Food Guide that was recently revised that really emphasizes the plant-based food and the meat and other animal products are just part of the protein quadrant rather than having their own quadrant, which is a huge progressive move. So we need to just start to implement our own policy that's already in place there, our food guide. So there's a lot of opportunity for the government, but also on the consumer side, huge opportunity is just to make those changes to the way you consume food, and it's healthier too. And one final point, when you said about the plant protein opportunities, I mean, there's also a business growth sector there that is huge. And, you know, that's something too, I think the Canadian government can do, and is that more investment in that sector, its business opportunity, as well as, you know, being important for health and climate change. And we're just going to see it grow. You know, you see big companies, even Maple Leaf, you know, a big meat producer has rebranded itself as a protein company. They're no longer a meat company. They've rebranded because they see huge opportunity in the plant protein sector. So if they do it, you know that that's where the market is going.
Well, thank you very much, Lynn Kavanaugh, Farming Campaign Manager of the nonprofit World Animal Protection Canada, for coming on the show today to explain your organization's findings on superbugs in our waterways from factory farms and what we can do to stop this. If you would like to read the report yourself, you can find it posted on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, as well as on our website at animalvoices.org in the posts for today's show. Also, please visit worldanimalprotection.ca to find out more about this organization's work and how it has been serving to protect animals for 50 years. Thank you once again, Lynn, for the very insightful and important information that all Canadians and really global citizens need to know. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Allison. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.